find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everything starts with a design. Art, fashion, architecture, just about everything. Wouldn't you like to know more about what inspired the designer and why they designed something as they did? Welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. We'll speak to some of the most renowned names in the field of design, along with Ann and Eleanor's comments and flair. Let's get started. Here's Ann and Eleanor.
Hello and welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design. I'm Eleanor Schrader Schapa.
And I'm Ann Asher.
Today we have two guests to discuss traditional design in modern times. Our first guest is Mark Appleton, president and founder of Appleton & Associates, an architectural firm specializing in elegant traditional design. Our second guest is Daryl Schmidt, design principal of Daryl Schmidt Design Associates, who also specializes in traditional design in his interior design work. Both of our guests have been widely published and have received many distinguished awards for their contributions to design. Mark Appleton's design work has received many awards from the American Institute of Architects, and he has been widely published in Architectural Digest, Town and Country, Sunset, The Classicist, and other periodicals. He is one of only five designers who have consistently been named one of Architectural Digest's top 100 designs since its inception in 1991. He is the author of three books, George Washington Smith, An Architect's Scrapbook, California Mediterranean, and New Classicists, and he has also assisted in the publication of a new book, Casa del Herrero, The Romance of Spanish Colonial. Mark is a founding member of the Appleton Whittle Research Ranch Foundation in Arizona and the Mingay, have I said that right, Mark?
Mingay,
International Museum of World Folk Art in San Diego. Well, welcome, Mark, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, could you tell us more about your background and how it led you to your philosophy of design?
I will try to do that as succinctly as I can. Obviously, it's a long story, but I'll try.
We want to hear it.
Well, I went to architectural school in the late 60s and was trained, like everybody else at the time, in the language of modern architecture, modern and post-modern architecture at the time. My apprenticeships following school were also with firms that practiced and essentially modern architecture. Mm-hmm. And my last apprenticeship was at Frank Gehry's office from 1973 to 76. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful 3 years for me. And when I decided to start my own practice in 1976, I wasn't sure what design direction I personally wanted to take, but I had pretty much figured out what I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that I felt that most architects were focused on creating original, innovative buildings that would make them stand out and be noticed. They were, in a sense, I suppose, branding themselves, mm-hmm. branding being a word we use a lot these days. And perhaps, you know, clients too, particularly corporations, were anxious to have unique, iconoclastic buildings, and so I think this has been a very compatible relationship between iconoclastic architecture and branding of companies and buildings. But I had become rather disenchanted by what I felt was a fairly narcissistic professional enterprise. And it also seemed that modern architecture was having to shout louder and louder to get noticed. It was becoming more inventively outrageous, if you were.
Yes.
If you will. And in response, I think what I began trying in a small way in my own practice was to turn more and more towards traditional and classical architecture, to our professional history, if you will, for inspiration. And practicing here in California, I was particularly intrigued by architects who were practicing in the 1920s, who seemed very versatile, worked very competently in many styles without the need to impose a self-conscious personal stamp on their buildings. And I think, for me, that was the seminal change for me in the direction of my practice and my work.
Yes. And Mark, could you tell us more about how the issue of subtlety has all but disappeared in the architectural designs of today and how you've addressed that in your architectural work?
I think you can look at architectural styles as languages, and I think
yes,
the study of architectural history, not just as an art history discipline, but as a professional, a practicing architect, you start looking at architectural styles as languages. And historically, there are many more languages than the modern language, and they all have different cultural identities and different dialects. But it's possible to be creative and original within any of these languages. And I think this is something that's been of great interest to me. I felt that architecture clearly was becoming more and more bombastic, and louder and louder, as I think I said before. And to me, I felt we could be more subtle. Architects
yes.
practicing could be more subtle, and that creativity didn't need to shout at you. But as we all know, I think buildings, you know, that get noticed these days are shouting pretty loudly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of hoping someday we can tone it down and realize that there's great beauty and subtlety, and also great beauty in working within certain traditions and not feeling like you have to put a personal stamp on everything.
Oh, yes, please. We would love to have you lead the pack in that.
You... Well, I'm not alone. I think there are other people out there.
Oh, this is why we love your work, is because you have brought back this subtlety to the landscape, and especially in Southern California. Mark, you've spoken about the frenetic variations of historical types. Could you go on that a little bit more?
Well, the architects who, like me, who are trained in the modern idiom, really have been disconnected from a lot of architectural history.
Yes.
And I think when you look at, I think this is related to your question, when you look at the practicing schools of professional architecture that are out there, I think there's something like 160 in the United States. Only two or three of them have included the study of architectural history within their professional curriculum. In other words, not just as an interesting sidelight, but as something actually integral to the practice of architecture and to training architects. And I think this is a great oversight. When I compare it to law schools or medical schools, and I ask myself the question, well, how well would we be doing in law if we forgot about precedent altogether and just tried to be original
right.
with every case that came to court and had no reference point on which to build, no historical reference of precedent? It would be a pretty sad affair.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of medicine. I mean, you know, the practice of medicine builds on its history, and it's always referring back to it, it seems to me, for innovation and for inspiration. How is it that architecture has managed for half a century
mm-hmm.
to essentially forget about history altogether and say it's not important? What's important is just simply doing something of the moment and of the time. And for me, the wealth and richness of that historical past is something that I think has informed my work that I struggle to bring into my work, even though obviously we're working for current clients in a very contemporary setting. It doesn't mean that history can't inform that.
Exactly. And we've seen so much brutal work in the big mansions all across the, not only United States, but in other parts of the world. And I think it's so sad that we've lost that historical connection. And again, this is why we appreciate your work so much.
Well, I think, you know, to be fair, and as a related to that, mm-hmm. you know, it, just turning back to classical architecture and to tradition doesn't necessarily mean we come up with great results. It could be said that there's an awful lot of bad traditional architecture being practiced out there. And I think we're learning. We've lost, in the profession of architecture, we've really lost the ability to learn how to do traditional architecture, and so we're struggling. It's not something that's taught in the schools, and it's not something we all grow up with.
Right, Mark. Before we take a break, could you talk a little bit about some of the designs that you're working on now?
Well, we have I think if you probably looked at our website. Mm-hmm. Website, you might be a little confused because we have a very, if I may call it, promiscuous practice, where we try to approach each new client and each new project with fresh eyes and a clean slate, and not. I think part of it is related to our intent on not foisting any personal signature on the work that we do for clients, but to be inspired more by the clients, their individual programs, where we're doing the project, the context in which we're working. And so you're going to see a lot of variety in our work that you might not see perhaps in other mm-hmm. architectural practices. It's always hard for me to, you know, when someone says, well, what are your favorite projects? I struggle to answer that question because I think it's probably the ones we're working on at the moment.
Right.
And we have a large body of custom residential work. We also do institutional work and the occasional odd project. We just finished a resort hotel renovation in Santa Barbara.
Ooh.
We're working on a school that's occupying the old St. Anthony Seminary next to the Mission in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
So we have these. We've done
Mark, we want to hear more about the work that you're doing on the seminary, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Dishing the Dirt on Design.
Great.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com. Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. What does the new healthcare law mean to you? Why is the country facing a deepening deficit? Can it be reversed? If education is important to fund, shouldn't we insist on seeing results? Do we have a workable energy policy? Who's calling the shots? Tune in to In the Public Interest with host Mike Hudson. We'll cover public policy, everything from taxes and spending to health care and other threatened entitlements. If it's in the public interest, it's in your interest to know. In the Public Interest can be heard live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design. We're talking with Mark Appleton of Appleton and Associates, a very famous architect. Mark, you were just mentioning that you're doing some work on St. Anthony's Seminary, and it would be wonderful if you could finish it up. We spoke about it briefly before the break.
Great. It's quite a fascinating project, a very challenging one. St. Anthony's Seminary was constructed over time as an adjunct to the Santa Barbara Mission, in predominantly most of the buildings being done in the 19th century. And it had, by the late 20th century, fallen into disuse, was no longer a seminary. These were kind of abandoned buildings. But they were purchased by our client who wanted to occupy it and create a non-denominational school, elementary mm-hmm. and high school. So we've had the task of not only earthquake-proofing these buildings, these old masonry buildings, but trying to create a campus out of this for the new school. That's been a wonderful challenge. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy in my practice is the ability to take an existing situation with a lot of historical layers in it already and just try in very compatible ways to add a new layer to it, to give a new lease on life to an abandoned historical
yes.
building is always a wonderful challenge,
mm-hmm.
and that's the nature of this one here.
I love your approach to projects. Being a designer myself, I love to take an approach very similar to yours. What else can I add? And I'm so happy that you're bringing that out. Let us go on to another topic. I've heard you talk about contemporary architecture and saying that at times you feel that it's lost its connection with human scale. Could you please elaborate on that for us?
Yes, I'll try. I think one aspect of this sort of avant-garde, high-tech modernism that's so fashionable and so much a part of our lives these days is that it can lose its relationship to human beings. Modern buildings can, by definition, be quite abstract
mm-hmm.
and separate, in a way, from any cultural and social context. And quite often, they're designed like little islands.
Yes.
without a relationship
yes.
necessarily to the things around them. And I think part of that, for me, is often, you know, that they're out there flexing their muscles,
mm-hmm.
saying, look at me, look at me. But if you look back historically, history reconnects us to the human condition. And I think contemporary architecture has, often by intention, lost that connection.
Yes.
We really need to look at our buildings for their sociological and cultural references, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's with an abstract building, it's very hard to get that. Quite often you don't know what it is. Is it a house? Is it a museum?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a post office? Or how big it is or small it is. And when you take away the human cues, which are embedded almost automatically in historical culture, and you try to wipe the slate clean and create an abstract structural, sculptural mm-hmm. piece of architecture, I think you really lose that connection, and I think a lot of our buildings suffer from that.
I agree with you on that, Mark. And furthermore, I think there's another word that can describe them, even though they may be very eye-catching and very well done. Very often, they're very cold, and that affects the human scale and how it relates to the building individually.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Let us talk about landscaping, because I know that you have gotten into that business and are doing a spectacular job with it. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we kind of fell into landscaping by default rather than by choice, and I think it was a natural outgrowth of the way we practice architecture, which is that it's always been hard for us not to think about the context in which our buildings are being designed, and we can't really stop with the outside of the building.
Right.
I think designing the outdoor spaces that relate to that architectural interior are something that's always been very important to us. So almost automatically, we've included that in our design process for clients. And I think that the fact that I am based in California, that our practice is essentially in this wonderfully benign Southern California climate, means that we also have a lot of indoor-outdoor spaces that we're designing. So you can I think understand how naturally we gravitated towards also looking at the landscape. I personally grew up in a family of green thumbs. My grandmother and my mother both had enormously green thumbs and would regale us all at the dinner table with taxonomy correct our pronunciation of Pittosporum undulatum as Pittosporum undulatum. So, I just grew up with a horticultural background that I think made it easier for me to also transition to plants and to planting in the landscape as a way of another branch of architecture. I mean, landscape architects often refer to gardens in the context of them being defined as outdoor rooms. So it's a natural interconnection between the two. And I've never quite understood, why they got so separated. One thing that's wonderful about historical and classical architecture is that the relationship among all the players, not just the architect, mm-hmm. but the sculptor and the painter and the landscape designer, were much more compatible. When McKim, Mead, and White designed the building, I don't think they couldn't possibly think about it without also inviting St. Gaudens or one of their sculptor friends into the equation. And so the integration between architecture and art and sculpture and the landscape was much greater. And I think that's one of the other lessons that I've benefited from looking back historically at classical architecture. There's quite a wonderful marriage among all the disciplines there. We don't have that today. I think modern architecture makes a token gesture towards it. It's like that 2% for art mm-hmm. that public projects have, mm-hmm. and they hire us, some artist to plunk a sculpture down in the middle of the plaza and call it a day. This is a far cry from what, happened 150 years ago.
Right.
I know that you are very involved with the Institute for Classical Architecture. It would be wonderful if you could tell us about that wonderful organization that many people would probably be very interested in if they only knew about it.
Well, the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art is one of the organizations, not the only one, but I think in the United States it's certainly the major organization that is trying to re-examine architectural history and classical architecture to see if there are valuable lessons for practicing architects and artists. New urbanism, which is a corollary movement looking at how we design our cities, is also looking back, I think, to historical neighborhoods and planning as lessons that might well inform us as we look to planning future urban environments. And I think it would be pretty hard to argue that modern architecture and urbanism has, in the last century, made for healthier and more aesthetically appealing cities. So New Urbanism and the Institute, I think, are involved in looking backwards so that we can kind of look forward a little more richly.
Yes.
When I was on the board of ICANA in New York, a friend and I also thought, why don't we try and start a chapter here in Southern California? I think it must have seemed like a silly idea at the time. Mm-hmm. And here we are in Los Angeles, the hotbed of avant-garde, fashionable avant-garde contemporary architecture, talking about starting a chapter, Southern California chapter, the Institute of Classical Architecture and Art. But lo and behold, I thought we might have three or four students. Lo and behold, we're now a membership that's approaching 300 architects and designers and realtors and other interested people, all very fascinated and very interested in this dialogue of looking backwards.
That is wonderful, Mark. It really is. And thank you for telling us. I'd like to just give the website. The website for the Institute of Classical Architecture is www.classicist.org. And the website for Mark's firm, Appleton Associates, is www.appleton-architects.com. Mark, it has been such a pleasure talking with you, as it always is. And both Eleanor and I thank you so much for coming on the show today and giving us so much valuable information and your philosophy on current architecture. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. Michelle Kors 6 Degrees is your connected consciousness. 6 Degrees is what comes around, goes around radio. Committed to delivering a fresh perspective on thought-provoking, investigative information that can change your life. 6 Degrees connects you to the social and emotional scene and is your trusted advisor from finance to romance, mainstream to metaphysical. It's a positive, upbeat look at life, love, and the pursuit of passion. Get connected Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best, excellence, and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our program on traditional design in modern times. Our next guest is Daryl Schmidt, who is world-renowned for his hospitality designs, including the Montage Beverly Hills, the Resort at Pelican Inn, the Peninsula Beverly Hills, Casa del Mar in Santa Monica, and several Four Seasons hotels and resorts. His award-winning work has been published in Architectural Digest, interior design, hospitality design, and numerous other magazines and books throughout the United States and abroad. He is a 40-year member of the American Society of Interior Designers and has served as president of two chapters. In 2009, he was named the designer's Designer of Distinction, the highest national honor given to acknowledge the quality of a designer's body of work. This year, he was inducted as a fellow in the Design Society. Darryl, thank you so much for joining us today. It is a great pleasure to have you here. You are a very, very accomplished designer who turns out beautiful work. And I feel very fortunate to be able to interview a fellow designer of such significance in the field. Darryl, we'd like to hear about your background in philosophy, how these things led you to your award-winning designs of today, but especially in the hotel industry.
Thank you, Anne, and it's a pleasure to be here with you today. To give you a little background on me, I went to school in Chicago, which was quite literally the birthplace of modern architecture in the United States, in the birthplace of the skyscraper, and so many wonderful architects worked there at the turn of the 20th century. So I absorbed a great deal of that in my studies. And then I moved to New Orleans, and that, of course, is a very architecturally significant 19th century city. So I, throughout my career and all my studies, I've been very steeped in the study of historical architecture and design.
What about the hotel industry in particular? What led you to the hotel industry? How did you begin to get involved in it, and how did it evolve for you?
I've always been interested in hotel design because ever since I was a little kid, I was always fascinated by hotels and what exotic and interesting places they were. So I always had a desire to work in hotels, and that, in fact, is how I landed in Los Angeles, because it's a center for hospitality design firms.
Wonderful. And who did you work with, and what was the background in that?
When I first came here, I worked for 10 years with James Northcutt Associates. Mm-hmm. And James was a very well-known boutique hotel designer in the 80s and 90s. And then I reestablished my own business again after that.
Wonderful. I remember seeing his work in many different places, and it was really wonderful. That would have been a great firm to be involved with, because you would
He did marvelous work, yes. And he, too, was very interested in architectural history and getting details right, even though he designed very contemporary interiors.
Yes, he had a way of melding the two together, which was just great. But you do the same thing, too. You can do anything. You're very flexible. Darryl, I know that historical references play a very important part in your designs. And you've said, and I love this quote, you have to know the rules before you can break them. And now I'd love to hear you expand on that.
Well, I think that's very true. And we see so much really bad architecture around us, particularly in the last 20 years, where people have failed to deal with traditional design because it does remain popular for a great many people and a great many uses. But there have been a lot of practitioners who have maybe in their idea move it forward or change it or update it, but there's just an enormous amount of bad architecture that's been promoted.
Yes.
And in L.A., particularly the Mediterranean revival from the 80s on, I don't think anybody building these McMansions has looked at a book and really checked on what accurate detail is, because they've produced some real very low-quality work. And that's a shame, because Los Angeles has such a rich history of historicist work. It was just a hotbed of creativity in the 1920s and 30s, when there was a huge population of fantastic craftsmen who could execute all these wonderful historicist designs that were designed in a very educated way on historical precedents.
And this is why you have become one of my dearest friends, Daryl, is because you and I just get going on bad design and we just whip ourselves into a frenzy over it. And this is why we're so glad that we've got you and your company to bring taste to the masses.
Daryl.
Well, we do try our best with that, although, again, we try not to be slaves. As much as I'm interested in historical design, I don't want to be slavish to it, and we do live in a modern world, and we create modern and contemporary interiors. But if we refer to something traditional, we make sure that we understand first what the correct way is to do it before we adjust it.
Absolutely.
I know that you are very interested in trending in design, and there is so much going on in the trending of design. We've been in a long modernistic sort of beige or white color trend for quite a long time, but I think that there are other trends taking place now, and maybe you can address that.
Well, in residential design, I think really there's no such thing anymore as straight out traditional design. You hardly ever see a purely English room or a purely French room anymore. Those were the norm when I was growing up. But people want even traditional design, which they find comforting, to be mixed up with more exciting color, and it, at the very least, it's eclectic and transitional today to suit the more modern lifestyles. And frankly, a part of that is there's much less availability and relevance to 18th and 19th century furniture. Even in reproduction, there's less of it, and people seem less connected to it today as things are moving forward in design.
Right. One of the hotels that really took my breath away when I saw it was the Four Seasons Hotel that you did on the Big Island of Hawaii, in the state of Hawaii. Could you please tell us about it and paint a picture for our viewers that they can imagine through the verbal medium of the radio?
Well, for all of our projects in our in the hospitality world, the goal that we've always tried to achieve is that each place we design should tell a story about the place and represent that place and its uniqueness, so that when a visitor is there, they really know that they're in an individual destination and they get some sense of its history and culture. We've done several projects in Hawaii, and it's been one of our favorite places to work because they have such a rich culture. And each project that we've done has reflected that particular place. So in the case of the hotel you're discussing on the Big Island, it was our job to actually make the interiors disappear, as indeed the entire resort architecturally was intended to disappear into the landscape. It's so subtle. It's all built as bungalows. And there's such an indoor-outdoor feeling and such a subtlety to the design that you barely know whether you're indoors or outdoors as you move through the
And you achieved it. You achieved it. One melds right into the other.
That was the idea.
Daryl, was that some of your design philosophy when you designed Calistoga Ranch also?
Yes, that was another very interesting design assignment, both for the architect and for us as interiors people. That site had, for like 70 years, been a trailer park.
Yes.
And part of the entitlement when they could when they redeveloped it as a hotel was that the only thing they could build there was to bring in prefabricated housing units on the axles and put them on foundations. And so that comprised the module to create a small hotel. And again, and the additional caveat to the planning was they were not supposed to cut down a single tree.
Oh, good.
So all of these little units were set among the trees. And once again, it was our design philosophy that we would make the interiors try to disappear into that landscape because that's what the experience is when you go there.
Daryl, you have cleared up a mystery for me. About 7 years ago, and I know it was exactly 7 years ago because it was at the time that Katrina was happening, Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, I, with a friend, visited Calistoga Ranch. And I didn't know anything about it except that somebody said, oh, if you're up in that area, try it. And so we did. And I hadn't I said, these look like trailers. And it looks like nothing was cut down, but they just put a road up the center. And now I understand why it lays out the way it lays out. I have wondered over the years, what was the architectural design behind that place? Thank you so much for clearing that up for me. What it does show, that even if you're so held back, as you must have been in a project like that, having to use trailers, not being able to cut down trees and that type of thing, that you can create something very lovely and very creative. And, of course, it's been a success, and it's still there. Good
well,
for
always
you.
Always, it's the limitations that we're faced with in design that sometimes pushes to the greatest creativity.
That's absolutely true. I've had those things myself, and they're the wonderful challenges that we all love so much. Daryl.
Yes, you see many examples of things where carte blanche budgets and no limitations don't necessarily create more creative solutions.
Yeah, sometimes it's... Okay. Yes, sometimes it's just layers and layers of too much lace or something like that.
Exactly.
It's time for us to take a short break. This is Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we shall be back in just a few minutes with Daryl.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Go inside the world of PR with PR Insider, hosted by public relations expert Maureen Kettis. Maureen will speak to the world's highest profile PR pros from the fields of marketing, advertising, and sales. And PR Insider will feature renowned members of the media as special guests. Maureen will give you a VIP access pass, including tips and tricks to take your business to the next level. PR Insider with Maureen Kettis, sponsored by Cision, us.cision.com. Listen every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Network.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we're speaking with Daryl Schmidt of Daryl Schmidt Design Associates. And my students know how much I adore Daryl because of his knowledge of history and how he is able to put this into contemporary design. And Daryl, I would love if you could tell us more about some of your projects as the Montage Beverly Hills and one of my favorites, the Peninsula Beverly Hills, because you know the interior dining room is one of my favorite rooms in the entire world. And when I met you and heard that you had done that, well, I was just all agog, and I just thought I had found my design god. So Daryl knows how much I love him. So we'd love to hear more about
you.
These.
Thank you, Eleanor. And those are two good projects to talk about because they're both located in Beverly Hills, and yet each one reflects different aspects about what Beverly Hills is. The Peninsula is part of an international chain. It's connected with the Peninsula Hotels out of Hong Kong. And this was their first North American property to be built from the ground up. And so the challenge was, how do you make reference to the heritage of Peninsula Hotels and their Eastern traditions and join that with the California heritage? And that melding of East and West, as it's expressed at the Peninsula, has really become a signature and one of our most popular jobs that people just keep coming back to because it really established a younger, fresher kind of California elegance. It's not specifically historicist. It's got a traditional leaning, but it's done with more vibrancy and a lighter, somehow lighter palette. In fact, the way that we set up the color scheme for the hotel is we took a bouquet of roses with coral and yellow and peach-colored roses, and those became the color palette for the hotel, which are very flattering colors that have been extremely popular with people for years. So that was the idea for the Peninsula, and then for the Montage, the design of the building was done in Spanish colonial on the exterior as an homage to the original 1920s Beverly Hills City Hall, which is one of its neighbors.
Right.
And so for the interiors, we were asked to try to create the ambiance of 1930s Hollywood and make a glamorous interior that referred to the Spanish design that was being done of the period. So there again, we didn't really copy anything, but we did make reference to it throughout, and we tried for that sort of indefinable sense of Hollywood glamour that Beverly Hills is so famous for with the movie industry.
And Daryl, we were talking about some of the tiles at the Montage. Could you tell us a little bit about how your brain works in designing some of these spaces and the materials that you bring in?
Well, in the case of the Montage, one of our design inspirations was a famous hotel from the late 19th century in Spain. And its dining room was famous for beautiful hand-painted Spanish tiles. And so we worked with a local manufacturer here in L.A. to create our own color scheme and design palette to give a flavor of those tiles from a previous time. We did the same thing at Casa Del Mar in Santa Monica, where we worked with Malibu-style tile, which was very popular, of course, in the 20s and was actually made in Malibu, a very distinctive look that is all over Southern California now, including City Hall.
And that is a beautiful-looking hotel. Beautiful-looking hotel and beautiful use of those indigenous tiles. Wonderful.
Tell us more about the hotel, yes.
The building itself at Casa Del Mar is a national, it's protected by the National Trust, but the exterior only. The interior, by the time we were assigned to work on it, nothing was left of the original beach club that was built, I believe, in 1926 and had very rich period Spanish interiors at the time. All of that was gone. And our idea was to bring back a feeling for that wonderful legacy of 1920s historicist design to the building. And I think the greatest compliment that we get for it is that many people believe that they're looking at the original interiors when they first walk in. It's got a very authentic look, and despite how fast the world is moving now, and how we're rushing headlong into very modern design, it's becoming mm-hmm. much more common. I believe that people do appreciate authenticity, and they respond to it. Now, hotel interiors have been very popular from the day that it opened.
Oh, yes.
And they're all a reflection of these custom Malibu tiles, stained glass, light fixtures, metalwork, all of this that was inspired by the 1920s, even drapery details that are reminiscent of what was done then. And it all that handicraft goes in and is very much appreciated, I think, by the public. Mm. Whether they can put their finger on it or not, they sense it.
You know, you're making our hearts sing here, Daryl. This just makes me so happy just to think about going into Casa del Mar. Before I go to my next question, I just want to share a personal story about the Peninsula Beverly Hills. And Anne took me to one of the most wonderful dinners for my birthday this last year. And I just felt so all aglow in the color and the decorative objects that you brought into the dining room. Daryl, could you tell us just a little bit about that before we talk about some of your international projects? I want to feel that room again.
Well, in all of our work, whether it's residential or hospitality work, we believe that the whole point to an interior is to make people feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
and to make them look good, particularly in a public place. People need to look good. And so we're known for using a very flattering color palette for mm-hmm. virtually everything that we do.
Yes.
We don't use extreme colors, even though some of our interiors are quite colorful. We always keep in mind who the people are that are going to use them and what they'll look like in the interiors. Mm. So we keep things very warm, and a cool steel gray is absolutely not in my color palette. Anyway.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I have a little secret, Eleanor, uh-huh. that I have to tell you.
Yes.
We went to celebrate Eleanor's birthday, and we decided that we had to go to this wonderful dining room, and Daryl Schmidt had designed it, and I know how wild Eleanor is about Daryl. But I did something a little funny, and that is I maneuvered the seating so that Eleanor would be facing the door going out instead of looking into the dining room. But I did it for a reason, because you have the two most gorgeous chinoiserie panels
yes.
on those walls, and I wanted her to look at them. So now
yes.
I'm coming clean with the story, but there was a reason why. And there aren't too many people who know how to use those panels as well as you, Daryl.
Gorgeous.
They were exquisite. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, Daryl, we'd love to hear about some of your international projects now.
Well, one of them that I think you might find of interest that's in the same area of interest is a hotel called the Anissa Hotel that we did on the island of Cyprus
oh,
in
yes.
the eastern Mediterranean. It was a very big project, 200 rooms, and it took 8 years to design and build it. It was a very complicated construction project on this small island. And the interesting thing about it was that with the social upheavals that Cyprus experienced
yeah.
in the second half of the 20th century, they literally, their building trades totally forgot their architectural heritage.
Mm.
They just built concrete boxes quickly because they needed a lot of housing. And so the quality of architecture on the island went down very rapidly, just in a matter of a couple of decades.
Aww.
And what my client wanted to do was really reinvigorate and put attention back on the tradition of fine architecture that had existed there literally for 2,000 years, because Cyprus dates back to the Romans and the Phoenicians.
Yes.
And so in creating this hotel, we were charged with investigating different periods of the island's architectural history and then coming up with contemporary variations or interpretations of those periods, so that a guest would literally walk through different time periods of history.
Mm.
We represented Greek architecture, Roman mosaics. There's still a lot of Byzantine architecture on the island. We incorporated that. And then even there was a period when the Venetians occupied the island, and it was very elegant, bringing Italian influences into the architecture
wow.
there. So that all got incorporated into it. And I must say, when I've gone back to Cyprus since the hotel has opened, it was hugely influential on the island in inspiring other architects to go back and investigate and adapt their own very rich architectural heritage. And there are many more very beautiful buildings that have been built in the last 10 years there, I think, as a result of this hotel. Another one that we're working on is in London, and it's a series of 1835 Regency townhouses that were newly reconstructed from the inside. All the important architectural features like plaster friezes and iron balustrades and stone stairways were very carefully restored. But then the new kitchens and bathrooms that were all added are all done in wonderful, very sleek, contemporary Italian design. And we're furnishing it in very contemporary, wonderful, modern art and modern furnishing. It was a wonderful play on history again in a different way.
Daryl, this has just been a wonderful talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today.
And Thank you.
Oh, and can you tell us your website?
It's www.DarrellSchmidtDesignAssociates, DarrellSchmidtDesignAssociates.com.
Oh, Daryl, thank you so much for joining us today. And we want to thank our two guests, Mark Appleton and Daryl Schmidt. Please visit our Facebook page, Dishing the Dirt on Design, where you'll learn more about our guests and their gorgeous work.
Thank you for joining us. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, Daryl, and good luck.
Thank you. It's been great spending time with you.
You too, as always. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening this week. Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa will be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, for another edition of Dishing the Dirt on Design on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.